On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It is 2 months to midterm election day, and Republicans are in such a bitter standoff over immigration that many don't even want to talk about it anymore. But Pat Buchanan wants to talk about it. In fact, he's yelling at the top of his lungs. The conservative populist and three-time White House aspirant is in a hot sweat over illegal immigrants and what he sees as the looming downfall of the United States. State of emergency is what he calls it in his new book, The Third World Invasion and Conquest of America. Critics call it racist and xenophobic. Pat Buchanan says he's telling it like it is. Up next on Point, Pat Buchanan paints his immigration state of emergency, and critics push back. But first, for the latest on the battle over new immigration policy in Washington, I want to turn to Michael Doyle, Washington correspondent for the Sacramento Bee newspaper. Michael Doyle, good to have you with us again.
Hello, Tom.
So the president made a huge push on immigration not so very long ago, and now it seems stuck in the tar pit. Is anything going to happen this fall?
Well, there will be talk this fall, and in fact, as early as Thursday, House congressional leaders, the Republican congressional leaders, are likely to meet together to plan their strategy for the coming weeks, and are likely to come out and declare that they fully intend to restore order to the border and erect more security measures there as part of their national security strategy. What appears very unlikely to happen is passage of a comprehensive bill because the House and the Senate legislation is so far apart.
Remind us of the battle lines on Capitol Hill and effectively that run through the GOP.
Well, and it is the division within the GOP that is so important politically because it's the Republican Party that controls both House and Senate. Essentially, there are two approaches. The House last December passed a border enforcement bill, focuses strictly on law enforcement. It erects a 700-mile fence along the U.S.-Mexican border. It imposes tough new penalties, creates a new felony crime of being present in the United States illegally.
Right.
The Senate this spring passed a bill that included some of those enforcement measures, but combined it with some sweeping legalization and guest worker provisions that would address many of the 12 million estimated illegal immigrants now in this country. And so the divide is between those who see immigration as a law enforcement matter and those who see it as an employment and worker rights issue. And within the Republican Party, there's a tremendous divide there, which is one of the reasons there's action on a complete bill is unlikely.
And Michael, how are Republicans interpreting the politics of this? What's slowing them down here? Why are they afraid to move forward?
Well, there's a vocal and politically active, perhaps minority, but nonetheless a politically potent core of the Republican base that believes, as Mr. Buchanan does and others, that it is strictly at the border and through enhanced law enforcement that immigration, the problem of immigration, can be controlled. And that those are voters that the leadership is loath to antagonize in advance of an election where the control of the Congress is at stake. Every single House member has to run for re-election in November. It is, by many accounts, going to be a very close call as to whether the GOP can retain control of the House. The last thing the Republican leaders want to do is to put some of their members at risk by forcing them to cast a politically dicey vote. It may simply be more safe politically to avoid further action, or rather complete action this year, and kick the ball over till 2007.
Your paper is in California, where there's a huge amount of agricultural work done by migrant labor. What about the farm and, you know, agribusiness industry and other industries? Don't they have the clout to push the Republicans forward here?
Well, traditionally, agriculture and agribusiness is aligned with the Republican Party, and it is quite potent in California. And the agricultural leaders I talk to are intensely frustrated by the lack of congressional action, and they concede that it is their own allies in the Republican Party that are declining to act. Next week, there are a number of California agricultural trade organizations and others that will be returning to Washington in a probably futile effort to spur action. But there is a considerable angst over the fact that their own party, while in control of the Congress, has been unable to push an agricultural guest worker plan, which it should be said is very controversial and would affect more than 1.5 million individuals. So it's quite a large proposal. Nonetheless, the GOP farmers are quite unhappy.
But for now, it's hunker down and make it through the elections in the GOP. Michael Doyle, Washington correspondent for the Sacramento Bee, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Joining me now is Pat Buchanan, a leading conservative voice in American politics, advisor to three presidents, three-time candidate for the presidency. He's the founder and editor of the American Conservative magazine. His new book is State of Emergency, The Third World Invasion and Conquest of America. Pat Buchanan, welcome.
Thank you, Tom.
It's been a while since we've talked, and you've got a very big alarm bell clanging here. You're a student of history and love to tell it. Take us first back to Rome. It's where you start the book, and it's where you root your warning that America is at risk of downfall.
Well, in the 4th century A.D., around 375, the Emperor Valens, the Roman Emperor, was faced with a crisis. A huge number of Goths had been moved across the Danubian plain toward the frontiers of Rome. They had been driven there by the Huns. And it had been Roman practice never to let anyone into the empire that had not first been subdued. And the emperor permitted this huge number of Goths into the empire, and 2 years later they rose up against him and killed him at the Battle of Adrianople. And the historian Peter Heather believes that it was the opening of the Roman Empire of the Danubian and Rhine frontiers to huge masses of immigrants and aliens into the Roman Empire that was really the cause that brought its downfall. And I've cited other historians in that they describe the old Rome and the old Rhine and Danube frontiers of the Roman Empire are similar to the Mediterranean and to the Rio Grande frontiers of the American and Western empires. And I look at the West as in its history. In 1913, it ruled the world. And since then, of course, we had two suicidal civil wars, World Wars I and II, and the Western empires all collapsed.
You're calling those civil wars within the West?
Within the West, mm-hmm. The mass slaughter of Western peoples of one another on ideological grounds and imperial grounds. And what happened is the Western empires collapsed, and the Western nations now have birth rates that are below replacement levels, every single one of them, including the United States. Some of them are half what is needed to survive. Russia and Ukraine, for example, 200 million people together now, will lose 50 million people by the mid-century. And into these empty, prosperous, rich, fat lands are now coming the invasions of third world peoples who were once the subject peoples. Across the Mediterranean, of course, it is a smaller migration, but it is more critical for this reason, two reasons. One is European nations have no history of assimilating immigrants. And secondly, they're coming from a culture and civilization, Islamic, which has been traditionally hostile and is now increasingly militant and challenging the West on the grounds of, if you will, religion and philosophy and ideology. And we see tremendous problems in France. Last summer, 300 cities were ablaze with vandalism and fires and attacks by the second and third generation Muslim immigrants who basically are reassimilating to what they came from, their parents came from. America's case is different. In this sense, it is across the Rio Grande, and we have 36 million immigrants here in America now, 12 million illegal, more illegals than all of the Irish and the Jews and the English who ever came from Jamestown to John F. Kennedy.
And so you're right, the West is passing away from the same causes and in much the same way as Rome. But Pat Buchanan, the U.S. does have a history of assimilating immigrants, a giant history of assimilating immigrants. Mm-hmm.
Let me talk about that history. America has had periods both of no immigration and high immigration and low immigration. For the first 200 years, New England had virtually no immigration once the founding fathers and the first colonies were settled. And then the Irish came in the 1840s, and that immigration in those years, 1845 to 1853, after the revolutions of 1848 and the Irish potato famine, they amounted to 2 million people who came to America. And that was considered a tremendous problem at the time. But after that, you had a complete timeout virtually during the Civil War and up till about 1880, 1890 when we had what's called the Great Wave until 1920. That was one of the largest migrations in history. But Tom, here's the difference. These were predominantly Western people, predominantly Western and Christian, and they had come from countries not too dissimilar from the United States in their ways of governance, et cetera. They had a different language.
Are Mexicans not Western and Christian, Pat?
Pardon?
Are Mexicans not Western and Christian?
Mexicans are, many of them are Christian, but I do not think they're by and large Amerindian, and they're mestizo, and they are not Western in the sense that you would say that Italian folks and Ukrainians and Russians and even the Jews who were not Christians but who were Europeans.
Pat, lots and lots of questions you raise, but let me ask you first, because the bottom line that you draw here is the end of Western civilization, the conquest of America. What's the nightmare scenario? What's the problem, the crisis you're pointing to that results from this immigration?
Well, I think first is, with regard to Europe, is the Islamization of Europe and its division into Islamic and secular societies that are constantly in conflict with one another. I think that's already happening. In the United States, the imminent danger is in the complete Hispanicization of the American Southwest. The Census Bureau estimates 100 million Hispanics here, more than that, concentrated in the Southwest, half of them in Texas and California. What I see is, in that case, you have the cultural, the ethnic, the linguistic, the social reassimilation of the American Southwest by Mexico. It becomes as much a part of Mexico as it is of the United States. Native-born Americans, for the first time in all of history, are leaving California, coming back over the mountains. You have in Los Angeles already a black-brown war among the underclass in the prisons and the streets. These Crips and Bloods together are battling the Mexican gangs who are becoming dominant, and black Americans are leaving California. So what I see is increasingly a bifurcated nation. When you have two cultures, and the Hispanic culture is very strong, and if the assimilation does not take place, and I don't see it taking place given the vast numbers, I think we divide basically into two nations. And I think America comes apart much like the Balkan Peninsula has come apart. And those people, of course, have lived together for centuries. Mm-hmm. But on issues of religion, culture, not ethnicity and race, but religion and culture and history, they have broken apart. And I think the same things will break America apart.
Pat Buchanan, you know, when Americans hear this, I think it hits all kinds of chords, very visceral, pro mm-hmm. and con, what you're saying. I mean, when I look at my own kids, they have, ancestors, let's call them, who became Americans in 1682 and others who became Americans in 1962. Part of that 36 million you're pointing to so critically, that's their family. I mean, mm-hmm. you concede, your critics look at your description here and they write you off as racist, xenophobic, mm-hmm. nativist, politically incorrect. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you. What would a racist, xenophobic immigration policy look like? And how is yours different from that?
Well, let me say this. I don't think there's, look, the country I grew up in was 90% white, or 89%, 10% black, and a smattering of Hispanics and Asians.
I thought we got over this color stuff in the civil rights movement. I thought we got over the color. I thought we got over the color issue in the civil rights movement. Wasn't that the point?
But look, we did. Hold it. Mm-hmm. You're getting a little excited here. Look.
Yes, I am.
Tom, that's what it was. And the city I grew up in was half African American and half white.
What city, Pat?
400,000 each. It was a good country. Mm-hmm. There was nothing wrong with the country. The American people did not want to change the composition of the country. They were promised by Teddy Kennedy in 1965 it would not change. And now we have 36 million people who have come in recent years, 90% of them from countries and cultures and continents and civilizations, and frankly, of colors and ethnic groups we have never before assimilated. It is enormous.
In the 19th century, people went crazy over the Irish and the Italians. They said, we can't handle this. We did.
But you're interrupting here. Let me go back to the Irish and the Italians. We have more illegal aliens here. Illegals, 12 million, than all the Irish, the Jews, and the English who ever came. It is enormous. It is mass criminality. It is not Ellis Island. There is no melting pot working. There is no 40-year time out. There is no will on the part of the American elites to assimilate. Millions of these people are coming not to be Americans, simply to work. They march under foreign flags. They are loyal to foreign countries, as I would be and my parents would be if economic privation had driven us into Mexico.
What's your solution?
We would not become Mexicans. We would remain Americans. They are not Americans. They are not of American nationality. Many don't wish to be of American nationality, unlike the Ellis Island immigrants who desperately wanted their children to speak English, become Americans, and to immerse themselves in American history. Pat Moynihan says, a country consists of an ethno-cultural core. And for America, it was Christian, Western, European, and it consists of beliefs. We have to believe that or even your ancestors who are, as you say, some of whom came in 1962, George Washington was the father of their country. They've got to immerse themselves in that history and heroes and holidays. It is not happening. What I'm saying is we are risking the dissolution of the country. If you are right, Pat Buchanan is an alarmist. But if Pat Buchanan is right, you people have idiotically destroyed your country.
Who's you people? Are you talking to me?
I'm talking about you.
Destroyed my country?
Well, you're talking.
Step back, Pat Buchanan. I'm not destroying my country.
You are permitting the destruction of your country, in my judgment, by permitting this mass invasion to go on. And you've used
terms. Well, we're all Americans here and looking for policies to see how to fix it. I'd like to understand yours.
Terms like the terms you've used? If people call me that, fine, I will accept that. But I am saying they can call me that, but this is what I believe they are if they continue this policy.
Hey, you've got the podium there, and we're hearing it. I'm saying, though, that is how it sounds to many ears, but we're hearing your turn on it. What's the solution you propose? Not just a 700-mile wall, but a much bigger one.
Certainly. I think I proposed in 1991, 92, an only 70-mile fence along the crossing points where huge masses were coming in on the weekend and just overwhelming the Border Patrol in the thousands.
Mm.
And they built a 14-mile fence that worked in San Diego, but unfortunately the coyotes and all the masses are moving into Arizona and Texas. So now I believe the 700-mile fence is behind the curve. We need a 2,000-mile security fence, 200 openings in it for traffic, tourists, all that. We don't want to isolate Mexico. We want regular communications with them. But
are you talking the kind of fence that the House is describing with its 700-mile proposal or something different?
Yes, that's
the
beginning. That's the beginning, and if I were Bush, what I would do, and I think Bush would win this election if he would do it, is throw out the amnesty, which no one wants, and the guest worker, which the people have rejected, and go for all the border security measures of both the House and Senate bill, send it up to the Senate and the House, make it part of a port security, airline security bill. I think he'd win the election.
You say double fence, guard towers, the whole business. So really, really and
well,
truly
I didn't
seal
say
it.
Guard towers. I think
wouldn't
he said you, guard towers.
Wouldn't you have
got
to have
a security
that?
Fence? No.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Of course not. This is not a prison. It's a fence like you have around the White House. You don't have guard towers in the White House.
I doubt it would be a fence like around the White House, that sort of pretty wrought iron fence around the White House. Is that all
it
takes?
Well, then you can't get into the White House, and we don't want people breaking into our country.
Right. Okay, so first comes the fence, and you mean right across the entire Mexican border. Have I got that right?
Yes.
And then no amnesty. What do you do with the illegal immigrants who are in the United States?
First, you don't have to do anything. That's not a crisis. You begin the deportation with all gang members who are not American citizens, all drunk drivers caught who are not American citizens, all felons who are caught who are not American citizens, any troublemaker, including people leading demonstrations who are not American citizens, I would instantly deport. Mexico, in its constitution, permits and warns about the detention and deportation of anybody involved in a political demonstration who is not a citizen of Mexico. I would follow the Mexican policy on that.
Lock it right down, including in the streets. Pat Buchanan, a lot of people want to speak with you. Let me turn to them. Steve's calling from Boston. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I do think Pat speaks for me and many people that I know. I think he's absolutely right on the analogy with the Roman Empire. I experienced the illegal immigration problem firsthand. I took my daughter to an emergency room last year at a hospital when she broke her thumb.
Yep.
I waited hours and hours while people who weren't speaking English were getting treated for health care. And my tax rates go up every year in my school system because I know there's people going to school who are not citizens of my country.
And, Pat, how do you square that with your own, no doubt, immigrant background of your own family? Is this different, as Pat says?
My family came through Ellis Island, and they were screened. People who were not healthy were not allowed into the country. People who were criminals in their European countries were not allowed into this country. And now, just like Pat just said a second ago, there are people streaming across the border who are illegal, breaking out laws, who probably even have broken laws or can't find jobs in their own country.
So you're there. You're standing with Pat Buchanan on this one, and we hear it, Steve. We thank you for your call. Let me get one from Myrtle Beach.
Let me respond to that, Tom.
Sure.
Let me just respond briefly.
Yeah.
He makes a very valid point, which I've also made in my book, State of Emergency. It is this. The amount of diseases coming in is astronomical. Tuberculosis, 1 in 7 East Asians in New York has tuberculosis. Immigrant children, not just illegals, have 100 times the cases of tuberculosis as American children. If they go to schools and cough in the classroom, that is airborne. We have a rising incidence of leprosy, of polio, of Chagas diseases, which never has existed in this country. Bed bugs are back in America. You have dengue fever. All of these things, many of which were eradicated, many of which we have never known before, are coming back in because, as the president said, 6 million illegals tried to break in on his watch. They are not checked.
And you're not looking at global warming. You're looking at bed bugs and Mexicans.
Well, you're looking at, I don't know whether it's Mexicans. Certainly, I would guess that would be some of them. Over the weekend, plague was discovered in South Texas. Where did it come from?
Raymond's calling from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Hi, Raymond. You're on the air.
Hello. I got three points.
Yes, sir.
And a question. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear him answer the question you asked.
You got it.
Racist immigrant policy looked like versus his, but he never did. All right, three things. This melting pot scenario, this 40-year timeout and assimilation into the society at large, those are not laws, and those are not rights that we as, you know, as Americans have, that everybody do that. Now, we have immigration laws, and so if you're going to enforce those. And on the topic of assimilation, when you talk about Irish, Jews, and Italians, and other Europeans, the key thing that you are not mentioning there is that all of those people can go for white. You know, your darker skinned people, your, you know, mestizos as you call them, and your African Americans cannot go for white, and so you will not have that kind of cultural assimilation that you have with your Irish, Italians, and your Jews. Now, I want to find out from Pat Buchanan.
Yes.
I just kind of reject this whole Roman Empire.
Let's hear
thing.
The question.
Question is, where has a developed country ever become a third world country because of immigration?
Let's pick it up, Pat Buchanan.
Well, I'll take one. I think Kosovo is a province of Serbia, and it was invaded by Albanians and Muslims in a peaceful invasion over time. And what is happening is that Serbia is losing Kosovo. It is becoming Albanian and Muslim. And I think that is certainly an example. But you've had cases in history of invasions. Most of them are military. But I'll tell you, a reverse case was the white folks in the South were invited into Texas by the Spanish government in 1821. Mexican government independence revolution succeeded the same year, and they continued the policy. And the Americans by 1835 outnumbered the Mexicans in Texas 10-1. And when Santa Anna seized power, a corrupt dictator, the Texans simply seceded, threw the Mexican garrison out, and declared their independence. And Mexico, that's how they lost Texas. And then when Texas joined the United States, which was legal, the Mexicans basically provoked a war with the United States, and they lost the whole Southwest. I don't want that to happen to my country. Now, let's talk about a racist immigration policy. I think an immigration policy that demands that that third world people have some inalienable right to come to the United States against the will and wishes of the American people is inherently itself racist. I see comments by the chairman of the Democratic Party of California. He said Prop 187 is the last gasp of white America in California. That's a racist comment.
Pat Buchanan, stand by. If you'd be good enough, I want to bring another voice in here for a moment. Tamar Jacoby joins us from Washington. She's senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. We've spoken with her before about U.S. immigration policy. Tamar, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Here's Pat Buchanan's big stake in the ground on immigration. He says it's a crisis, an invasion, a conquest of America. It's got to stop. Put up the wall. And bit by bit, toss them out. What do you say?
He's wrong in so many ways. It's hard to know where to start. But the main thing is he's leaving. He doesn't see how immigrants are good for this country. He will sometimes admit that they're good economically, but will then make the argument, well, that doesn't matter. They're hugely important economically. But let's leave that aside for the moment. Let's go to his battleground territory. Immigrants are assimilating. Today's immigrants are assimilating as quickly as the Ellis Island wave assimilated. The adults have trouble learning English, as uneducated adults always have in the past. The children, 99% of them learn English, want to learn English. The adults become citizens. The adults and the children are patriotic. They fight in our armed forces in proportion.
So you say they are assimilating. What about the economic impact, positive or negative?
Positive, overwhelmingly positive. Half of the new jobs in the last decade went to immigrants. That means half of the economic growth that happened would not have happened if there weren't immigrants here.
Pat Buchanan, they are assimilating, and they are essential, many say, for the economy. What do you say?
Well, first I say 12 million are illegal and ought to be sent back. Secondly, the remaining 24 who are here legally and came legally obviously have a right to remain. I would disagree how fast they're assimilating, but I would agree with Tamar that we definitely want to assimilate them, and I believe we need a complete time out on immigration in order to do that. Now, with regard to the economics of it, she is right that I do have issues other than economics. I'm much more concerned about the cultural cohesion and the social cohesion and the unity of America as one nation and one people. With regard to the economics, though, we just saw in the New York Times that the real wages of working men in America have not risen since 1973, that the wages of the working and middle class have been very much arrested. Among the reasons for this is the vast migration of third world peoples, unskilled, uneducated, who compete directly and heavily with African Americans, not Asian Americans so much, but Hispanic Americans and white American working folks, many of whom, regrettably, never finished high school. I think what we are doing is perpetrating economic treason against the working people of this country by bringing in huge amounts of people to compete against them.
Tamar, you heard Pat Buchanan say there just before the break, what we've got going on here is economic treason against America's working people. What do you say to that?
I mean, I'm laughing because it's just so not true. You know, never mind whether Pat Buchanan's book is bigoted or not, it's just so wrong about so many things.
Well, but what about that stagnant wage of American workers?
Yes, American wages have especially working class wages have been steady for decades. It's not about immigrants. It's about the competition from abroad. It's about technology. Economists, even economists who are not particularly favorable to immigration, look at this and they study it and they scour it and they try to prove that it's immigrants who are responsible and they can't find it.
What do you think would be the consequences of Pat's strategy on immigration? If we clamp down on it, what does it mean for the economy in your view?
If we clamp down on it, huge sectors of the American economy will shrink, close, move abroad, farming will leave, food processing will leave, housing will shrink, will shrivel, it will be impossible to build things in this country, all the other industries that are dependent on that will be in trouble. It would be a disaster for this country to get rid of the immigrants or to stop admitting them. Pat Buchanan is right that the illegality that comes with immigration now is a terrible thing. It's corrosive for the country. It's bad for the immigrants. It's eroding the rule of law. It's bad for our security. We have to fix the illegality. But the way to do that is to have more realistic immigration laws.
Tamar Jacoby at the Manhattan Institute, thanks very much for being with us. Pat.
Let me respond to that if I might.
Mm-hmm.
It is simple economic ignorance to suggest that you bring in 36 million people into this country, 90% of them from the third world, unskilled, uneducated, don't know the language, but very hard workers, many of them.
I don't think tomorrow's ignorant. What are you getting at?
But let me give you the reason why. You can't say that you bring in this huge cohort, this supply of labor, 36 million people, and that it's not going to hold down or draw down the wages of our own unskilled less educated people who they're competing with.
Well, it all depends on what happens with economic growth, but let's broaden the playing field.
I mean, Tom, this is just, it is economic stupidity to say that you add a huge supply of unskilled workers and that the wages of the unskilled in America are not arrested or fall.
But you know,
every economist in the world knows that.
When you look abroad, for example, at Japan, where they have a very close policy on immigration, and there's all kinds of alarms there about what's happening with their declining population, you've got some economists who say we're darn lucky to have the immigrants because they keep our country growing and that's necessary for economic health. What do you say to that?
For heaven's sakes, the GDP of the United States is over $12 trillion. The idea, you know, and I supported the Bracero program as an editorial writer back in the 60s, and it was thrown out. And the tomato growers said, that's it for the tomato industry if you throw it out. So they threw it out, and the tomato industry mechanized, and the tomatoes are big as watermelons, and the price of them fell. Miss Jacoby is the alarmist here. And as for the term bigoted, look, 79% of Pennsylvanians in a poll said they oppose amnesty. 82% said they want a wall on the border. Rick Santorum, who was down 23%, is now within about 5 points of his opponent by running on the immigration issue for a hard line on border security. If Pat Buchanan is bigoted, the whole American people are, but they are not. They are up against liberals who have been overeducated into utter ignorance about history and about what is going on in this country, because many of them live in gated communities, and with due respect, they're listening to NPR rather than being out in the communities where this thing is a hellish social, economic, cultural, and criminal problem.
My friend, I'm out there. I've got family right across the country, including in Texas, including in Los Angeles. Let me ask you about the politics of this. How do you analyze it? President Bush, Republican president, very strong for this kind of immigration reform that includes what critics like you would call amnesty. Why does he support that?
I think he does for ideological reasons. He agrees with Mr. Jacoby. He's very neoconservative on this issue. Secondly, K Street in the Senate bill, hidden in the Senate bill, is a complete pardon for all businesses from all civil and criminal penalties for having hired illegals, as well as amnesty for the illegals and a guest worker program for corporations. The corporations have made this priority number one. They don't care where you stand on right to life or gay marriage. This is priority number one. They pay the room, board, and tuition of both parties. Third reason is that Bush and Rove have bought into the myth that California was lost to the GOP because of Pete Wilson's hugely successful campaign on 187, where he rode it to re-election. They misread politics. They're ideologically committed to this, and they're politically terrified of the ethnic lobbies and the corporations. That's why they're doing what they're doing. But Bush, this is why he's killing himself with his base. Bush is down in the low 30s. His base is up in arms against what he is doing on this.
Pat Buchanan,
let
me get a couple more callers in here, if I may. Mitza's sure. Calling from West Haven, Connecticut. Hi, Mitza, you're on the air. What do you say?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a question for Mr. Buchanan. I am not Mexican. I'm a U.S. citizen because I'm Puerto Rican. However, I am also educated, and I listen to NPR, but I'm also out in the field. And you're talking about penalizing immigrants. What about the business owners who hire them? If everybody does a mass deportation, who's going to take the job? Because I'm sure Mr. Buchanan is not going to pick up some grapes.
Mr. Buchanan probably would have about 50 years ago.
Yeah.
All right, let me answer that. It's a good question.
Let me just get the end of Mitza's. Mitza, I'm sorry. Just the end of your question there, Mitza.
My question is, you know, this, Mr. Buchanan sounds so, like, idealistic. It's not even real. It's like you're asking 12 million people to leave the country.
Yeah, we've got it. Mitza, thanks for your call. Pat Buchanan.
Well, what you do is, look, you cut off the jobs for them by punishing the businesses, just as you suggest. You cut off all welfare benefits, just as Proposition 187 did in California before some judge, ideological judge, overturned it. You get that done. You deny citizenship to the children or the babies of illegal aliens who sneak into the country. You remove the magnets. When you remove the magnets, they will go home. And that is what happened in the earlier immigration. When Italian folks came here and didn't find what they wanted, they went home. And then you build a border security fence on the border, and it will happen. Look, we're not going to die if the illegal aliens leave the country and maybe I pay more for a car wash or I pay a little more at the restaurant or something like that, and the wages of working Americans go up. with due respect, I would like to see that happen because I fear a class division in this country along the lines of race and ethnicity as well by 2050, where you got folks, people of color who are not part of the knowledge industry, which is making all the money, and we get that kind of division, it'll make the 1960s look like the good old days. Mm-hmm.
Pat Buchanan, stand by. A call from Waterloo, Iowa. Bob is on the line. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I don't like some of the name-calling that's been going on with Pat. I do totally support Pat in his ideology. The thing of it is my son, 17 years old, cannot get a job because he doesn't speak Spanish in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have thousands of children that are between 16 to 21 years old that cannot find jobs. Who's going to take over the jobs of the illegal aliens? In the meantime, not only do I have to support my son that can't even support himself in some aspects, but I have to pay extra in taxes for health care, for those their illegal aliens' children to have the same education as my child, which takes time away from my child in the classroom.
Yeah, we hear it, Bob. So you're saying, go, Pat, go. You're feeling the pain with your 17-year-old there and what feels to you like a double burden. We hear it. I want to get one more voice in this hour from Washington. Cecilia Munoz joins us. She is vice president of the National Council of La Raza, a Latino civil rights and advocacy organization. Ms. Munoz, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
What do you hear in Pat Buchanan's critique of illegal immigration and in his solutions?
Well, I think I hear in his description of our country and his description of my own community something that I don't really recognize. I mean, he's describing a country in crisis, and he's describing an Hispanic community as invaders. There have been Latinos in the United States at least as long as there have been people named Buchanan. We've fought in every war in this country since the Revolutionary War, and it has been true and continues to be true that the overwhelming majority of us are native-born Americans just like Pat Buchanan, and it is really offensive to be described as an invader of your own country. As for his views on immigration reform, I think if there's a consensus on anything on this issue in this country, it's that we have a broken system and needs to be fixed. The question is a wall going to fix it, or do we need a policy that provides people with appropriate, proper legal channels to come? You had a caller talk about his ancestors coming to Ellis Island. If there were a legal mechanism for the workers who are coming to come today, they would come by that mechanism. The problem is there isn't one. And the kinds of reforms that we're trying to enact combine enforcement with strong enforcement in the workplace as well as the border.
But it's not just legality, Pat Buchanan.
Yep. For workers, so that we don't have a problem with illegal migration.
But Pat Buchanan wants it legal also, but not just legal. He wants reduced numbers. And he says, look,
no numbers. He's calling for a moratorium. And let's just be clear. You caught him on this, Tom, earlier. When he describes the threat against the West, you appropriately asked whether Hispanic people who are largely Christian and who are very much from the West count as Westerners in his analysis. And the answer is that we don't, because he doesn't really mean Western. What he means is white. This is really, he's describing a country that is where people who are white are threatened by people who are not. And that is not the country that I live in. It's not a country that I recognize. I see a country that values its diversity, and I see a country with people from all over the world, whose ancestors are from all over the world, who see ourselves as one nation.
Pat, what about it? This issue
of the kind of nation that all of us have contributed to make us.
Yeah, it is splendid in many ways, but yet Pat Buchanan sees a problem there. Pat, this line between, you talk about the cultural core of a country, the line between that and a racial core can look very thin sometimes. How do you describe
it? It doesn't mean it doesn't. It is. Let me again cite Pat Moynihan. He said a country consists of an ethno-cultural core. Now, ethno, by and large, we were of British descent, and after about 1920 in the Great Wave, we became of European descent, and we were predominantly Christian, predominantly European, which is predominantly Western. Now, in 1960, we had a measure of cultural, social cohesion, and we had to integrate African Americans. I do say this. There's no doubt of it. Many Hispanic folks are Christian folks, but their folks are now coming from continents and places that have never before been assimilated.
But
now,
couldn't
we have failed? Let me talk about the ethnicity, please.
I want to ask a question about ethnicity. I want to ask a question about that. Couldn't your argument have been used equally well, maybe the whole book, as a defense of slavery, saying if we free these people into our ethno-cultural society, we will destroy it. I mean, couldn't this have been an anti-
It was used. You're exactly right, Tom. Let me talk on that.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the American, what do you think the American Colonization Society, which contained Madison and Hamilton and Henry Clay, and Abraham Lincoln gave the eulogy for Henry Clay in 1852, calling for the not the emancipation, but for sending all African or all slaves back to the African continent. Now, I think that was an awful thing to say, and it was an awful thing, but there's no doubt they were concerned about it. And there is no doubt, Tom, that while we should integrate or desegregate our society and integrate folks, that it presented a tremendous problem. I was in Mississippi in the 60s. I was at the March on Washington. I was covering all these mass demonstrations. It's why Nixon got into the presidency. What I'm saying is, when we have this difficulty here, why import deliberately or allow people to walk across our borders when potentially we could have another situation like that?
Let me get a call from... We hear it. Let me get a call from Killian in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Killian, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I wanted to talk about mestizos. I am a Colombian immigrant. My family has been in this country for many generations.
Mm-hmm.
Most Americans I know are also mestizo. They are a combination of European and Native. The liliest white people I've met have Blackfoot, have Cherokee. Second point, the Polish and German immigrants that came at one point did not assimilate well. In Greenpoint, Brooklyn today, you hear more Polish than you do English.
So take us to your big point, Killian. What do you got?
And the last thing is that as a legal immigrant, I feel that Pat Buchanan is attacking me personally, and I do believe that illegal immigration should be stopped. It is illegal for a reason. We are using them, so there should be some sort of system like the President Bush. I think this is the one thing President Bush has right on the nose. I believe that Pat Buchanan is really launching an attack on non-white, whatever that means, because obviously...
Yeah, Killian, our time is so short. We've got it. Cecilia, I know I've just got you for another few seconds here. What do you say to Pat, to Killian's complaint here?
Well, I think, you know, the accusations
what do
Pat
I
Buchanan
say?
Is making...
Hang on.
Yes, Cecilia?
The accusations Pat Buchanan is making are the same ones that were used against Irish immigrants and German immigrants and other immigrants before us. They were wrong then... They're wrong now, and I just think it's shameful that he's making these arguments.
But Cecilia, you know as well as I do that we are winning. We have won the argument.
It's certainly offensive to communities of Americans like Hispanic Americans who are Americans, which is
Cecilia Munoz. I will, Pat. Cecilia Munoz at La Raza. We thank you for being with us today.
Thank you,
Pat Buchanan. It's your book and your hour. What do you say? Final words.
I say, look. What is the name of her organization? National Council of La Raza. What does La Raza mean? The race. Who is she talking about? Who is she to be charging people with racism? I mean, for heaven's sakes, the National Council of the Race looks out for the interests of one race. They have every right to do that. But the fact that they're accusing me, who grew up and went to integrated schools of that and who has an awful lot of African-American friends, is preposterous. The point is, we got the other caller, all this whining that Pat Buchanan is hurting me and I'm sick and ill and I don't know what I'm going to do, this is preposterous. Look, we got to have an intelligent discussion about this and a debate and an argument about it. And yes, race and ethnicity are not everything, but looking around the world, they are tearing countries apart and they are not nothing. And we have to talk about these things. And this book talks about them. And the truth is, Tom, as everybody knows, we have won this argument. All over America, the amnesty crowd is in retreat or silent. The open borders crowd is now saying we're not for open borders, really. The Wall Street Journal hasn't run another editorial on that. We have won the argument politically. Now all we want is the security of our country. The border security is just like port security and homeland security and airline security. We want it secured. Everybody here legally, I don't care where they came from. Every citizen has the same rights as me. You're exactly right. And they have the same voice in this argument. But I don't give up my voice because of who I am and where I came from. And the people who are calling all those names, many of them, they ought to look in a mirror, especially National Council of the Race.
Pat Buchanan, two-time Republican nominee for president, Reform Party candidate, presidential candidate in 2000, author of State of Emergency, The Third World Invasion and Conquest of America. Pat Buchanan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.